I wanted to carry the Believe foundation. There was a little Believe foundation in terms of her. So I took the hustle, my work ethic, the Believe from her, and the Believe in myself, and then Achieve. So that's where the hustle, Believe, Achieve comes from. Donnie Malcolm was taking Castillo Clayton through some exercises. I think Castillo was about 2 years away from the Olympics. I just was in awe watching everybody down there work, seeing how they move their head, slip through punches, and I was like, I want to be like them.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 33 of the Good People, Bad Intentions podcast. My name is Matthew Pine, and our guest today is Brett Beaton. Brett Beaton is a professional boxer who will be making his second bout November 5th at the Against the Ropes fight card, a fight card that is promoted by our previous guest, Kyle the Real Deal McNeil, with Real Deal Promotions. And this fight card is going to be at the Lighthouse Arts Center in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I'm really looking forward to have Brett on to talk not only about his upcoming bout, but to also talk about his gym, hustle, believe, achieve, as well as his own personal training, Beaton's fitness. Of course, I have a lot of questions about his past bout and the situation regarding that, but I also understand that there's a lot of story within Brett, and I'd love to get to know everything and share that with you guys. So without further ado, here's Brett. Welcome, Brett, to the Good People, Bad Intentions. I'm so glad to finally have you on the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm great, man. I'm great. Just in camp, just living good, you right?
You just had a session not too long ago, right? Is that where you're just coming back from?
Yeah, just coming from my gym, HBA Boxing and Fitness.
Okay. How is the preparations going for your November 5th fight?
Things are going great. I know a lot of fighters always say that, but this is the best camp I've had thus far through my amateur career and through my professional career. Obviously, my last fight, I took an L, right? So yes, that kind of wakes you up a bit and you dial in a little deeper when you get into another camp. So that's what I'm focused on right now. And, that's what I'm doing. Just learning on the job.
And while you bring it up, I realize it's hard to talk about a loss, you know, especially yeah. This was a much anticipated pro debut. You have, for sure. Quite the accolades when it comes to being an amateur. You're a provincial and Atlantic champion. Yep. I even saw that you were junior high provincials wrestling.
My guy's digging deep. Yes. Digging deep on me.
When it comes to combat sports, I mean, you've had quite the career already, albeit not in the professional side of things. But when we're looking back at what happened roughly around a year ago, how have you reflected on that event?
Well, anytime you take a loss in life, that is like that wasn't the biggest loss I've taken. I've taken way worse losses than that. But anytime you take a loss in the ring or in life, I always sit back and think the first thing we do is we think about what we could have done different. Coulda, woulda, shoulda, right? Mm-hmm. But honestly, I reflected on it. I accepted it. And now I let it go. And now there's certain things that I will do differently leading on in my life when it comes to preparation for certain fights. Not for all fights.
And I want to get into your preparation for this upcoming fight. But before then, I just wanted to ask, your opponent that you had in your first fight had very much the same outcome happen to him in his next fight. Mm-hmm. You fought against Derek Pomerleau in Quebec.
Experienced amateur, right?
Experienced amateur, Canadian national champion, I think, three times.
Yeah, can't beat the accolades, right? Like, he's real deal guy, right?
So I imagine, like, at the time, of course, you had that loss and you were recovering from that. What was your reaction to when your opponent had the same thing happen? Have you had any exchange with words with Daniel, you know, after the fight, your first professional fight, and after his loss against the Derek from Quebec?
So our relationship is hot and cold. Mm-hmm. We've exchanged some words through DMs. But at the end of the day, it is respect. We're both fighters. I seen him in public. You know, we weren't on no type of put your hands up energy. We kept it professional. But we will meet again, and he knows that. And he said, I got to earn it. But I'm focused on this fight here November 5th. And if he's not next, he's going to be after that. So that's all I'll say about him.
Thank you. I was just curious, because there's a little bit of between BoxRec, between Ticket Fairy. I'm trying to – do you know your opponent? Is it Darren Fletcher?
Darren Fletcher had – I guess he had – he broke his contract.
Okay.
And he signed it first, and he took another fight in his hometown, I guess, in Ontario. Okay. That's what I'm told. I think it was an easier fight, and he didn't want to fight me. But hey, it's all good. Go do what you need to do. He can get it too. So it don't matter. He can get it after this guy if he wants it. I didn't break no contracts. I don't know what the point of the contracts are if these guys are breaking contracts, right? But my new opponent, Israel Ramirez Carmona.
Okay, Israel Ramirez Carmona.
Yes.
He will be your opponent November 5th.
He will be my opponent. He's a veteran. He's been in the game for a minute. I'm sure he's going to come to fight, and he's going to be tough. He got the Mexican pride behind him, right? So all those Mexicans are tough, and I got nothing but love and respect for the Mexican community, but it's going to be a man-down situation on November 5th.
I just wanted to bring this up because I noticed that you were wearing the shirt, a shirt that you oftentimes have worn while you were fighting.
Yep.
It's Kerry Lee Dixon.
Correct.
I've done some research and some background into what had happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
Rest in peace.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to ask you, could you give us a little bit of some information around that event that had transpired and how it's molded you into a fighter today?
That's a great question, man. So basically she was, she was 12 years old, going on 13. It was the month of March in 2006. She was about 10 days away from her birthday. And she was taken from us by a sick individual, an unfortunate situation for my whole family. Not just my family, but the whole community at Eastern Passage Dartmouth, because it was a tragic event. But that really shifted my mindset to realizing at a young age that, you know, she never had a chance to do some of the things that I'm able to do, was able to do, like play hockey, go to high school or junior high wrestling, to do all these activities. She was taken very young. So I would say it just, I wanted to carry her memory on. And I was obviously dealing with some trauma because she was my first cousin and she lived with us. And, I was 10 years old when she died, but it still feels like, you know, like a year ago, right? It still feels very, it always will feel like that. It's molded me into, I would say, just a tough individually, mentally and physically. And that's why I fight. I do it for her, man. I do it for her. She never had a chance to fight, so I'm going to carry that memory on for my family, for the people at Eastern Passage, for everybody that knew her. And it just molded me into a humble beast, because that's what I am, a humble beast.
Thank you for sharing that, Brett. I know it's not an easy thing probably for you to talk about that. You know, obviously there's been some time since then, but I know that that happened at a very young age. You know, and regardless of what age, that was such a tragic event for the community that I'd imagine that people are still affected by this every day. Would it be fair to say that Kerry, even though she was your cousin, she was very much like a sister to you? Because I saw in the motivated
100%.
I saw in the motivated video on YouTube about you that you had mentioned that you were sharing bunk beds, you were very close, and then when this whole event had happened, you know, it was very apparent to you and the rest of your family what had happened in everyday life.
Yeah, I mean, she was like a sister to me for sure. We shared a room together in the last year or two of her being on Earth, right? It was a very tough event, like I said, man, I don't think it ever gets easier. I think you just learn how to cope with it. But I think I'm in the right direction of carrying her memory on. And shout out to the Motivated too, man. He done a lot of stuff for me, in terms of building my amateur career up, making videos for me, helping me carry her memory on. That's another reason I started personal training, was because of her. I wanted to carry the Believe Foundation. There was a little Believe Foundation in terms of her, so I took the hustle, my work ethic, the belief from her, and the belief in myself, and then achieve. So that's where the hustle, believe, achieve comes from. Not a lot of people know. It's not just something that I concocted off the top of my head. It's deeper than that. You know what I mean? It has a lot of meaning.
I'm glad you brought that up, because when I look at fighters, one of the things I first want to know is the why. Now, it's very evident from everything we've talked about that you carry her memory on your shoulders every single day, and that mm-hmm. allows you to push forward and continue your goals, your ambitions in the sport, as well as other goals, like for instance with your gym, your personal training. I'm glad you also brought up the origin, because I did notice that you have a beautiful portrait tattoo of her on your arm.
Yeah,
and I also realized that you have the Hustle, Believe, Achieve slogan or mantra.
Mantra, nice, yeah. You can say that.
So you started your gym during the pandemic, am I right? With the Hustle,
Correct.
Believe, Achieve? I understand you've had your own gym, Beaton's Gym, but when you started this project, Hustle, Believe, Achieve, this was during the pandemic?
Yeah, myself and a very close friend of mine, who loves boxing, great athlete. His name's Eric Bowers. He's a entrepreneur, a great dude. And I started personally training him and, we just clicked, and, he's a boxing fan. He's always wanted to box when he was younger, but he transformed into a great trainer, and, he's learning on the job every day. And me and him just, we decided we were going to open HBA Boxing and Fitness in Spryfield, his community, because Spryfield Boxing has closed. And it worked out perfect, because at the time, that community needed a gym, right? Needed a gym. We have a lot of kids. We got a great kids program there right now, and it's only getting better. And we've been open a little under a year. We opened in January of last year. So, you know, it's slowly building up, and we're developing a little bit of a good name in the community, and that makes me very happy and fulfilled.
One thing I wanted to kind of mention, because I remember when I had looked up some videos about you, there's a great video of you training at your gym that you had made in your parents' garage. The Beaton's gym. And I noticed that there was a lot of ties in that original gym to, the Maritimes, kind of fishing, fishing supplies. Do you have any history within the fishing community that brought some of this, or was it more so like, cause this was a very stylized, you got graffiti, you got so many amazing things. And what I noticed from that Motivated interview is how you said you and a bunch of your guys had made that.
The gym?
Yes.
Like in my parents' garage?
Yes.
Back to your question about yes. the fishing. I know a lot of fishermen in the community. Mm-hmm. Got a lot of respect for them, mm-hmm. their work ethic. But me personally, I've never had my hands in that pot. Maybe someday, I don't know, who knows, right? Nothing really inspired me from the fishing community, but the fishing community in Eastern Passage, Fisherman's Cove, they're all very supportive, and they all show up to the fights. And shout out to them, man. Shout out to Fisherman's Cove, Eastern Passage. Stand up.
It's crazy because I think we're like around roughly the same age. Are you born in 97?
I'm 95.
95. So you're a little bit older
than me. You got me disclosing my age now, man.
No. So I'm from Yarmouth, right?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't a fisherman. My father was a fisherman. My grandfather was. And what's really interesting in these communities is the importance of hard work that tends to regardless of if you're a fisherman or not, those conditions that fishermen go through can shape the mindsets of the population.
Man, that's a great analogy, would you call it? Yeah. I mean, that's a great analogy. I never thought of that until you just said that. I think coming from a tough, rugged fishing community, you kind of already, you're born with that mindset as it is because it's sink or swim. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I think that's a great analogy. Yeah.
Thank you. The location of Hustle, Believe, Achieve, I remember seeing early on that it was in like kind of like you were staying at a house and you had like this access to this one room with a bunch of windows, natural light coming in.
Yeah.
Is that the same place that the gym's currently at? Because I know that you've gone through a lot of renovations with your gym. It's such a beautiful gym, stylized, everything.
Thank you. So actually, where I live in Waverly, I had access to the sunroom just next door. It was connected to where I live. Shout out to my landlords, actually. They were wicked. They are wicked. And they let me put the gym in there, and I didn't really advertise it too much. It was more or less guys coming to work out for free, doing a little, just getting a little sweat on. And then we found a location, like I said, in Spryfield on Herring Cove Road, where the opportunity arose, and we jumped on it, and we put the ring in there, small little 12x12 banger ring, and we got a couple bags, we got a couple things up, and it's really shaping into its own little tough work ethic gym, I would say,
A previous guest that I've had on, Matt Johnson, has been training at Hustle, Believe, Achieve. I've seen a lot of great content that he's been putting out about his process. Can you talk a little bit about Matt and where he's coming from? Because when I had him on, he was talking about how he was a 40-year-old, going into his 40s, getting into boxing, some of the issues that could bring, but also kind of bringing that mindset of, doing previous sports and coming into it.
I met Matt at City of Lakes Amateur Boxing, the club that raised me, taught me more than boxing, I'll tell you that. They taught me how to be a man. I met him there, and we clicked. He's 40 years old, but he wants to test himself, and he wants to have some amateur fights, and he's a huge mental health advocate, I would say, and he lets it be known, I'm 40 years old, but I don't have it all figured out. And I'm still struggling just like the next man, but I'm dealing with it in better ways than some people would. And, that I got a major, major respect for him. Me and him, that's my running guy, man. Me and him link up in the passage and we go for a run and we go check out Kiralee's monument because he lives in the passage. And we pay our respects and we keep on going.
That's beautiful to hear that. And I'm glad that he's your running partner. And I'm just also glad that you had brought up City of Lakes, because obviously City of Lakes is one of the most iconic you could maybe argue Citadel as well, but one of the most iconic gyms, Gary Johnson, Kirk Johnson, Custio Clayton,
Artie
all people
Cousins,
that you know. Artie
Brandon
Cousins,
Osborne.
Yes, Brandon Osborne.
Alonzo Simmons. I keep going. Corky Downey. I can keep going, man. Brett Beaton, the list goes on. I hope I'm not forgetting anybody. Terry Gray, I got to say some. Jerry Burns, I got to say some more names.
Floyd Donovan.
Floyd Donovan, the man. the myth, Donnie Malcolm, Gerard Barrett. I got to give a shout out to them, man. It's all love. I love those guys. That's my family. That's my home.
You started boxing there at 14 years old?
Yes, sir. 14.
What was it? Can you kind of describe like your first time entering the gym?
Yeah, I'll never forget. I'll never forget it. It smelled like the hockey room when I walked in, and I loved it. It smelled like the rink. I walked in, and it was, I think Donnie Malcolm was taking Castillo Clayton through some exercises. I think Castillo was about 2 years away from the Olympics, maybe a year or so, and I just was in awe watching everybody down there work, seeing how they move their head, slip through punches, and I was like, I want to be like them.
I've seen even clips where you're sparring with Kirk Johnson.
Yeah.
Can you kind of talk a little bit about, you know, Kirk, like how does the dynamic all work? Because these are all great people that you're bringing up, and they're all in this one gym. I mean, what was it overwhelming meeting all these people and finding out what they've done with their careers and what legends they've become?
Yeah, at first it was like, man, I didn't know. I was like, wow, I'm blessed to be in the presence, right? I just tried to soak it all up. But at the time, when in my early career or early stages at City Lakes, I was more or less, I was consistently going there, but I was going through a lot of, I think I was dealing with a lot of traumas as a young man. So I think I was going more or less there as an outlet, mm-hmm. rather than to become a fighter. Of course, I picked things up along the way and I would have my good days and things like that. But it taught me how to deal with some of the things that I was going through at the time. And then once I got through those, then I really could appreciate who I was around and some of the things I was learning. Right. So yeah, if that makes sense, you know, yeah,
it does. And it makes me want to talk about a topic that not a lot of people talk about being a young man, becoming a man in this kind of world that we live in, because, you know, there's been more and more awareness about some bad things that men have done and other things like that.
Right.
In the past as well as in the current.
Right.
And how do you navigate this landscape where you're in boxing? Of course, it's a more visceral sport,
mm-hmm.
But you're trying to maybe show those dimensions in yourself that you're caring, because you are a caring person.
Yeah.
How do you show those dimensions as a man while being also a boxer?
See, that's tough, because you can show those dimensions to certain people, but you can't show them to other people because they'll walk on you and take advantage of you. So there's a fine line. It's okay to be caring. It's okay to be loving, but there's certain times where you have to be somebody you don't want to be when you're faced with certain situations as a young man. And, yeah, like you got to pick and choose. And then eventually you get to a point where it's, like a vibrational set point, and then you don't come below that because you've already went through so many things, and then you won't allow yourself to snoop down to this level. You'll just stay here, and you won't put yourself in situations where you got to be a hardened, toughened young man, because you're not a young man anymore. You're just a man. Right. And real men know when to walk away, and real men know when to not be subjected to certain type of people, places and things.
Thank you so much for sharing that, because when you mentioned about, you know, some of the struggles of being a man, you know, personally, I can totally relate to everything you just mentioned. I mean, when we get into boxing, I know I've not fought yet, but when you get into the landscape of the mindset of a boxer going to war, you know, fighting,
mm-hmm.
you can't really show those emotions
exactly.
when it comes to the fight. And indeed, one could argue that at every moment somebody's watching us to see if we show those emotions. But how do you have that balance where you want to have relationships with people, where you want to show people, hey, I'm not a jackass. Like, I'm actually a good person. Like, I got to be a jackass or, yeah. you know, a stern person when I fight, but I'm this person when I'm not. Do you feel like in some ways when you're boxing, you're like two different people or...
Yeah, it's a mindset when you get prepared to go into that ring, and it's that kill or be killed mindset, so to speak. And I hate to put it in words like that, but at the end of the day, if you're choosing to step in that ring, that man's trying to hurt you, and you're trying to hurt him at the end of the day. So there's an alter ego that you have to have when you step in that ring. But when I get out, you better believe I'm happy as can be. Win, lose, draw, it doesn't matter. I got my people there. I know a lot of people from the community. It's all love. I give it my all. As long as I give it my all, I don't care. I can be myself. I can be, you know, I can be me.
And we've had opportunity of talking to each other, meeting each other in person. I don't know if you remember the first time I met you, but you were at Titans. You were sparring with Pat Carroll.
Yeah.
I was watching you guys spar. I was talking with Floyd.
Yeah.
I also saw Gary there, I think, eventually.
I remember the day.
Okay. And I remember I went up to you and I said, hey, like, what's some boxers that you watch? And I remember, I don't have the notepad that I wrote on my previous phone, but I do remember that you brought up a lot of boxers that I didn't even know about. Like you didn't say Floyd Mayweather, you didn't say Mike Tyson, you didn't say like the usual boxers that people talk about when they talk about what tape they're watching. Can you kind of talk about where did you get this boxing historian mindset where you're really considering boxers from all eras?
Another great question. I got that from my Gary Johnson. He told me to study, when I was younger, he said, I want you to study Donald Curry. I want you to study James Toney. I want you to study Merlin Sterling. I want you to study so many different names. There's so many names, man. It's from all generations. Terry Norris, you know, Roberto Duran, obviously, like bigger names, but also names that didn't make it to the mainstream, so to speak, like hidden gem names. Like Donald Curry, you know, the Lone Star Cobra. He was a bad, bad man, right? Thomas Hearns, well, he was mainstream. Who else? A couple late great heavyweights. Yeah, I just got it from Gary. And that gym, City of, and from City of Lakes, they have that old school hit, not be hit. But that all stems back to these great fighters who paved the way for guys like Floyd Mayweather, guys who paved the way for, you know, these young guys coming up, Devin Haney, all these guys. Like before all those guys, there was them guys. Before them guys, there was them guys. So I like to bring it, I like to go back. And yeah, I just got it from them guys.
I like to think when it comes to boxing, like, yes, we like to connect with current boxers and everything like that. And in fact, they could be like the bait that kind of gets somebody into the boxing world. But I feel like there is a generation of people coming up that don't really quite understand or respect.
I agree.
Past boxers.
I agree. And they say, oh, he should have done this. He could have done that. And they really don't understand the sport. And I feel like they don't have respect for the sport. And if you don't have respect for something, just don't comment on it. You know what I'm saying? Or if you don't know, then you don't got to say anything, right? But if you think you know, show up at a boxing gym on a Saturday, a sparring day, then you'll find out real quick, right?
Yes, exactly. And speaking of sparring, I saw a really great thing that you were mentioning again on The Motivated. You're talking about a conversation you had with Kirk early on where you were sparring and you were kind of going a little bit to war.
Mm-hmm.
And can you kind of talk a little bit about that conversation that you had some years ago about sparring and not going to war while sparring?
With Kirk? The conversation with Kirk?
Yes, Kirk Johnson.
So basically he had told me a long time ago, like, you're a tough dude, but you also have skills, and skills pay the bills. So it's about touching guys, setting it up, and at the end of the day, if I take a hammer, this is the analogy he used with me. He said, if I take a hammer and I hit it at the same pace every day and I hit a rock with that hammer, eventually it's going to crack. So the less you stay from getting hit, taking punishment, the longer you'll last in the sport and you'll be able to have a longevity career. So even though I'm 27 and I've been in the sport a long time, like around the local community and a lot of people know me, I feel like I'm just now shaping into the fighter that I want to be, if that makes sense. Like,
yes,
things are starting to click. Things are clicking a little bit later for me because I had some blockages, I feel like, through, like I said, traumas and things you go through in life and things you did in your past and all that stuff that don't matter, right? At the end of the day, what matters is just working on yourself and becoming better, whatever you do. Like, doesn't matter. You could be an accountant, just be a damn good one at it, right?
I want to talk about your attributes, because as a middleweight, you have quite the height and reach advantage against a lot of your opponents. Would that not be correct?
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah.
Okay. I was just curious because I was trying to think of what do I want to ask Brett? And one thing I'm really curious about is, it seems like the counter to having somebody who has less height, less reach, is they're going to want to apply pressure on you.
Mm-hmm.
And how have you developed as a fighter with dealing with that? Because you obviously have, you know, in the game of chess, you have all the stats that would be in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd imagine that those fighters who don't have those dimensions, they try to make up with pressure fighting and going aggressive against you. How have you dealt with that?
Good question. See, earlier in my career, I used to like go to war. I used to stay inside, long arms, go to war, boom, 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 mix it up, get hit, take one, give one. As I get older, I transitioned into just using the jab, man, putting the jab, setting it up off the jab, you know, being in shape is a big one. You got to be in shape to use your jab consistently. You got to be in shape to fight, period. But I would say just getting back to the fundamentals. That's all. There's no secret or no recipe. It's just getting back to the fundamentals of boxing, footwork, defense, using your jab. Once you're able to do those things, I feel like you can set the rest up.
Yeah, I totally agree. I hate to bring this example, but I've been kind of thinking about the jab as like when in real combat, you know, with like wars and guns, it's that cover fire sometimes. Yeah. It's that those shots that make your opponent, whoa, and duck and cover. You know, that could be, of course, a jab has multiple reasons, but I never thought of it that way until I started watching some kind of war movie or something. I was like, that's what a jab is. It's like keeping your opponent, you know, thinking that a bullet's going to come.
Yeah, it is. Essentially, that's what it is. Also, it can be used as a power weapon with the right, in the right application, but you just want to touch your man with the jab to set everything up. So you're exactly right. It's like using, I don't know, I'm not a big gun guy, don't quote me, but it's like using a 9mm and a shotgun, I guess, you know?
Yes.
You're going to hit the target from far away with the 9mm, and then with the shoddy, as it gets closer, boom, you're going to hit the target, I guess. That's just something I just thought of. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you going with the analogy there. I was like, dang, we got a partner here. So Talked about the first time I saw you, then I didn't see you for a while. The second time I saw you, it was an interesting experience. I want to kind of give you my side, and then I want to hear what your side is, because, you know, we had, I was working with Adam Hazelton at the time.
Yeah.
We were looking at having you as an opponent, as a pro for your debut. And me at the time, I was kind of going around things. I wasn't sure if I was going to go back to the city or not. I went to Tribal, and I see that you're there, and you said something that I thought it was just so clever. You're like, "Oh, it's a spy," right? And I remember it always stuck with me, because I was like, "This guy has a sense of humor," and I was like, "That's actually like really clever." Can I kind of hear from your shoes like what you thought, and like, I mean, you're a comedic guy. I thought that was really funny.
Somebody put me up to that. I won't lie to you.
Okay.
I didn't concoct it, but I loved it. I loved every minute of it.
Yeah.
I loved every minute of it, because I didn't know that you were working with Adam, right? And somebody informed me, and they were like, I don't think they said call him a spy, but I kind of was like, oh, okay, he's the informant. And then when I seen him, I was like, there's the spy.
Right? Yes. I thought that would,
but
like,
no,
like
I didn't mean it in no type of way, bro. Like, no disrespect or anything, right?
No, no.
He would have needed more than you to help him.
Yes, yes. And I just love how that was like kind of the start. Then we've been able to see each other in the gym, have some conversations. Sure. Of course, you're on your own path as far as boxing. I'm on my own path. So my next question is, with when it comes regards to your camp, I've seen you training at a few different gyms. Who's going to be in the corner come November 5th?
Bridget from Tribal. And I don't know who the second's going to be yet. That's to be TBA, I guess. Is that
TBA?
I'm not sure yet, but
TBA for HBA.
That's it. So yeah, Bridget Stevens. Another, listen, she's worked with me for the last year. Love them down there, man. All the gyms around here, man, are all the people in the boxing community. You get a few, you know, you get a few people. That's like anything, but the majority of people in the boxing community around here are great, and they want to help the fighters, and, you know, it's all love and respect. And I admire her, because she has a big amateur squad up there. You know what I mean? There's a lot of fighters. You got Mo Malad. Like, shout out to Mo.
Yes.
You know, he's shout out to Mo. He's, you know, he's a great fighter. You got Andrew Thomas. You got, you got Jay Rodriguez. You got a lot of guys up there, man. That's the thing where when I go certain places, I feel like I develop good relationships with people. And that's what life's about, man, developing good relationships with people. Whether it's in boxing or business or life, that it's all about good relationships, I feel.
And you mentioned the great amateurs that Bridget has at the gym. I was just wondering, because you have that one pro fight, but then you have a really long amateur career. Has your mindset changed becoming a pro, or do you still see the value in amateurs, and like how do you navigate that, like when you train with amateurs versus pros when you're a pro?
So I feel like me personally, the mindset shifts a little bit, because the headgear comes off in pro. You don't want to be throwing as many punches right away, because amateur, 3 3-minute rounds. You get in there, you got to get busy, or else it could cost you the fight. Excuse me. But I feel like you just got to be. I'm more defensive minded when it comes to training. I'm just more defensive minded as of late, anyway. So you just know when you're training with the amateurs, have your defense on point, because they're going to be throwing some more combos. But also, it leaves them open more too. Right. So it's kind of one of those things. You just got to be aware. You just got to be aware that it may not be two punches coming. It might be three or four. Right. These guys are fast too. Right. These little guys.
Oh, yeah. When it comes to this upcoming card, of course, there's some names that you'll recognize and whatnot. One of them being Brandon Osborne. He's going to be fighting that Bridger weight. you know, Rizicki's going to be apparently there somewhere, you know, one of the inaugural fighters for that belt. I mean, are you loving that you're seeing people that you've been with and you've been developing as a fighter?
I love it.
Fighting on the same card? Do you feel the energy of this
event? I love it, man. This card is huge. Like, it's big. It's a big fight card. And I feel like Brandon Osborne, a guy that I learned off, coming up in the gym with, he's taught me a lot. And me and him were by each other's side for a long time training. But yeah, it's great seeing these guys that they don't want to give up. They want to get in there. They want to have that pro fight. They want to make their debut, you know. And he's a little bit older than me too, right? So it just goes to show, you know, maybe I'm motivating him a little bit, right? So.
And I wanted to say, we had your debut a year ago. But when it comes to, like, cards, and I've just noticed this just not really researching, but just knowing the local scene and whatnot. You've been the main event in a lot of cards, or very well close to the main event for a lot of your amateur cards. A lot of that pressure put on you. When you're kind of a little bit lower in the card itself, do you feel like, how do you feel? Do you feel any different because of that? Or do you always show up the same way?
Yeah, basically, man, I always show up. I can't say that because I always show up the same way. There's a little bit more riding on it when you're the main event because you've got to wait around a little longer. But it's not new to me because I was the main event for my last 12, 13 amateur fights, right? And I always would sell out. So I knew people were coming to support. Now the only thing is I get to get in there a little earlier. I get to get out, and then I actually get to enjoy the fights. You know what I mean? So before, you don't really I didn't really watch the fights. I was just focused on mine. Unless one of my buddies were fighting, I'd go peek my head out, take a look. But for the most part, I'm excited to get in there, be one of the first fights, handle business, and then be able to enjoy the night and watch the rest of the fights.
An observation that I've made talking with people about boxing in this area is you're really well known. Believe it or not, Brett, you are known not even with people that are in boxing, but even people outside of boxing. Your name has come up about 5 times when the subject of boxing has been brought up in my own personal conversations.
Oh, really?
I mean, what kind of impact has, you know, your following, because you have a local following, what kind of impact does that have on your preparations, on when it's fight night, when you're fighting, when you're meeting people? What kind of impact does that have on you?
I'd be lying to say it doesn't raise some pressure, right? But at the end of the day, it's motivating, man. And I feel like, you know, I give people that little bit of motivation sometimes in my community, within my community. I've had people come up to me and say things that changed my whole day around, saying, you know, man, I seen your video and I started going to the gym, or, you know, things like that. And when you hear that, you're like, damn, what I'm doing, people are seeing. Because I'm not one of those guys that are doing things so people to get clout or get this, or this is just who I am. And, like, I do put work in, but I do battle demons too. And other people see that and they respect it. And then it gives them a little bit of hope and motivation. And at the end of the day, man, that makes me happy. And it makes me just want to keep doing that, keep on the path I am right now and just keep trucking.
One thing I wanted to bring up, we're getting closer to the end of the time, by the way, but one thing I really wanted to bring up, we talked about the motivated, how they've done content for you. Somebody who also has done a lot of content for you is Matt Hayes.
Yes.
Now, he's done some brilliant, like, boy. I'm talking about, nobody's making videos about boxers anywhere near here. I'm getting hyped watching them. I'm watching them before this interview. I'm getting hyped. Like, can you talk a little bit about that experience with Matt, maybe your relationship with him, what that process is like making those videos, and because you do, they're really
well
made.
Shout out to my boy Matt Hayes, man. Like, big shout out. Me and him played hockey together for years. And another guy, he reached out. He's a huge boxing fan. And he, when I had my gym in my parents' garage, he had said, you know, I'd love to come maybe do some videos of you training and you take me on the pads. And I was like, yeah, sure. I didn't know what to expect. And he brought his camera gear and his longboard and followed me down the road as I was jogging. I said, damn, this boy's about it. But yeah, he's an amazing at videography, everything he's doing. And I really respect how he's transitioned in his life and what he's doing with his content and as a person. Great guy.
And I'm really looking forward to, again, more stuff. I think you, not just trying to take away from yourself as a fighter, but what I'm trying to establish is that going back to what we're talking about, being a young man, you have those dimensions. You have those dimensions already. You are a good person. You are, you know, very, very good on camera. You're also a really good boxer. One of my favorite aspects of your game is your eyes. You know, I've seen quite a few tape. You're avoiding danger at a lot of great times. You're very dynamic as well. Have good ring control. And you were mentioning your jab. You have a wonderful jab, and I'm glad that you're still working and refining that, because they say that that's what takes you around the world.
You're correct, man. Thank you for that, man. I appreciate that, bro.
You know, we're kind of wrapping things up right now. I really appreciated you coming on. I know after training it can be hard and everything. Your energy level might be like, you know, I want to sleep or I want to have something to eat. So I'm really thankful that you came on, Brett. I will actually be at the event trying to do some interviews. I would love to catch up with you during the event 100%. After your fight. And yeah, best of luck to you.
Hey man, I just want to say I appreciate what you're doing, and you're a great dude. I really respect this. This lifted me up. I had a great day training. This just lifted me up even more. So probably now, before I eat, I'm probably gonna go put my sweatsuit on and hop on my bike over there and watch some fights. I'm jacked up. I'm happy. I'm in a good place. So. I just want to say one thing only, and this is this right here. Can you read that?
Rest in peace, Pat Stay.
Yeah.
King lives forever.
Straight up.
Yeah, let's
talk. All I got to say.
Let's talk. Oh, okay.
No, go ahead.
Let's talk about it for a second. Listen, I don't know what relations you've had with Pat Stay, a legend. Can you kind of talk a little bit about, you know, what impact this has had for you?
So I didn't have a great big huge relationship with him. I knew him from Cole Harbour Place as a young fella, always seen him growing up, and really respected him as a battle rapper. And one of my best friends was actually training him for Rough and Rowdy. Artie Cousins was training him for Rough and Rowdy at the Dunkin' Donuts Center, I believe in Atlanta. And then when that had happened, you know, I think it hurt everybody's heart in the Maritimes. Like, even, I shouldn't say Maritimes, man, across the world. And, yeah, man, it was tough. And as he was training for his Rough and Rowdy debut, I seen him, and first thing he said to me, you know, I'm getting in the ring, bro. I respect what you guys do. I've been in training camp, and he really was getting a taste of what fighters go through. And that made me respect him even more, because, you know, he didn't have to approach me or say nothing to me. You know, he knew me as a little fella, like growing up, but he didn't have to say a word to me. But he always showed respect and love, and, you know, that brought up a lot of old emotions when he passed with my cousin. And two totally different situations, but with Kira Lee and Pat, it just brought up old emotions, and it hurts, and it still does hurt. And I know everybody, a lot of people are hurting, but yeah, long live his memory. Just like Kira Lee, man, I'm gonna carry her memory on, and other people are gonna carry Pat's memory on. And any chance I get to carry his memory on, I will.
I'm really glad that you brought up that, because it's been a huge impact on our area. I actually did a project in my class and argued that this is the biggest local story. You had to measure it by about 3 months or so, but I chose this as being one of the biggest local stories because of the impact that he's had throughout the world, not even just in Canada. And from my understanding, as you had mentioned, he had ambitious plans for the rest of his life. He was going to be boxing, as you said, and he was in the training mode. But he was going to try many different avenues was going to try many different avenues in order to get himself out there. And it's such a tragic thing, though, that, you know, it's only until he had passed away that someone like Eminem had mentioned him. Of course, respect to M, you know, everything, but I really wish that he would have heard Eminem and got that recognition that I believe he deserved from the start of his career.
I couldn't agree more, man. I hate to say this, but it feels like it takes certain people dying for other people to stand up and realize, and that shouldn't be the case. Like Nipsey Hussle, another one. He was in his community, obviously different place, but, you know, an icon in the community, doing good things for the community, just taking off. And that's where I feel like Pat was, man. He was just taking off with his career. Like, he was there, you know? And then, you know, some tragic, disgusting things happened to the man. And that's what it was. He just came out with the game diss. His wordplay was incredible, man. I listened to his battle raps and as a rapper too, I feel like he was just starting to become refined lyrically. He was just really sharpening up, like, because his wordplay was so good, but he was really sharpening up with his voice. And it just it sucks that it takes people to pass away to really appreciate, you know, just like Tupac, any huge person that had passed. And it sucks that's the way life goes sometimes, right? It would have been beautiful to see where he was going, you know?
Yeah, and this was a while back, even when he had made the feature onto Super Nova Scotian. I mean, Pat was making big moves, and
100%.
He was bigger than life as a person. I mean, he's so funny. He had the Unreasonable Rob
TV show
that was going to be coming out on Swearnet, still will be coming on Swearnet, filmed it. I mean, again, I'm trying to give context to some people that are listening. Like, his life was, in many person's point of view, like, only going up. Mm-hmm. And then something like this happens, and it really stabs the community. It really stabs the community in the heart. And I'm really glad that you brought this up, and I'm really glad that you were able to make parallels with your own personal life and with Carrie. And I love how we were able to bring awareness.
Yeah, man, exactly. Awareness, that's a big one, right? Coming together as people, too, because if you don't have awareness, you can't come together. And one more thing I just wanted to say was he got mentioned on the BET Awards the other night in a battle rap. That's huge. One of the rappers or one of the battle rappers, he said he was going to go to heaven and he wanted to bring back P&B Rock and Pat Stay. You know, on a platform like that, the BET Awards, to say that, you know, that's big, right? So it just shows how many people it has affected and the awareness it has brought, not just within Nova Scotia, but around the world.
Where can people get your Rest in Peace Pat Stay shirt that you had got?
So these ones here were actually sold at his funeral.
Okay.
So I don't know if they're available, but I know... shout out to Trev Clothing. Go on Trev Clothing and you can pre-order a Pat Stay t-shirt and a Pat Stay sweater, but the pre-orders end October 14th. Okay. So, yeah.
Thank you so much again for bringing this up, Brett. I'm glad we included it. And yeah, take care. I hope this will hopefully be a series of things. I'd love to have you back on the program. Love our conversation. And have a good rest of your day.
Take care, bro. See you, bro.
Thank you. That was Brett Beaton, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. A couple things to bring to mind. We talked a lot about the memory of Kerry Dixon. Of course, we talked about later Pat Stay. May both of them rest in peace. In loving memory, this episode. But I think a lot of us can relate in one way or another to when we experience loss and what we can do about it. Because for Brett, this was a very tragic thing that had happened at a very young age. And he has used this experience to carry with him every single day and motivate him to become a better person, to be a fighter, to go out there and to perform. And I understand that for a lot of people in this type of scenario, it could have the opposite effect. It could make us not want to do things. And so we all have to, with everything that we've gone through and go through to this day, we should always be trying to find ways to propel ourselves forward and not backward. So I really take the words that Brett had brought up in this podcast to heart. This is a very important message that I think a lot of us can benefit from. So without further ado, guys, if you enjoyed this episode, I strongly suggest that if you're listening to the podcast, that you leave an honest review. You can, of course, subscribe to the podcast so that way when new episodes come out, you won't miss it. And if you're watching it on YouTube, of course, you can like, comment, and share the video. You can also subscribe on there, and then that way a new video comes out, you won't miss it. And as always, guys, if you're looking for updates about the podcast or anything that's going on, I strongly suggest that you follow Good People, Bad Intentions on Instagram. I put a lot of announcements and things like that on the Instagram account. And until next time, take care.